or to follow. That the city police review board asked that the city council get independent counsel on this. They asked that also they direct the police officers to be told to testify those who are complained about, and the city council won't even do that. It will take no action. It essentially has emasculated its board. And it said that, well, somewhere down the road it may look into these issues once this whole matter is resolved. But of course, I don't think they're going to grant this kind of money again for another investigation real soon. And I think that this probably resulted in at least one resignation from the Citizens Police Review Board. Here's the memo from Gary Yamane of the Citizens Police Review Board. At the City Council's closed session yesterday, that would be on Tuesday, the City Council discussed the Board's recommendation on making the independent investigation public as well as other issues related to the investigation. The Council voted to direct the CPRB to follow the current ordinance and keep the independent investigation confidential, and also directed the Board not to pursue interviewing subject officers named in the complaint. The Council indicated that it would review recommendations for ordinance revision after the current investigation is completed. The Mayor, while forwarding a memo to the CPRB on these issues, is planning to attend the Board's December 13th meeting to address the Board. With this direction from the City Council, the independent investigator is now free to request any confidential police documents, including review the IA investigation once completed, if necessary, if it's ever completed. Of course, cases are still pending, and this is going to take a long time. And that's the reason that the independent investigator didn't show up in town today. She was coming every 3 days of every week, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. I should say yesterday, not today. She hasn't been showing up because there's nothing for her to do, because the Citizens Police Review Board is essentially a nullity here. Although, if you talk to her, she will tell you, well, you know, we're hoping for a change in the process down the road. Well, hope is good, but reality is, I think, a more important and vital tonic. In the studio with me, as a potential, if not co-host, I would say, is he a co-host or is he a no-host? I don't know what he is, but it looks like James Ney, that man about the Homeless Services Center, is coming out of the hills. Let's see if your mic works here, James.
All right. Good morning, Robert.
Well, sounds like the mic works. Any comments on any of these weird doings? I should say not weird doings, dark doings.
Well, a couple comments on what he said earlier. One about Tanya. The figure of 38 bullet holes in the body is from the morticians who took the body in, as reported in the Californian. Also that the claim of barricading in the bedroom was an impossibility, as he went into his daughter's bedroom, who had just moved out, so there was absolutely not a stick of furniture in that room. What did he barricade those doors with? Now they're claiming, I guess, he took the hanging doors off the closet and barricaded the door with the closets. So when you look at the fact that there's not a mark on the door, there's no splintered door jams, what did they kick in that they had to rush into this room? This shooting really is very questionable. Also, the fact that they claim five officers fired. If 38 bullets entered the body, how many went through the walls, how many missed? Five officers fired this many bullets? That poses a real strong question in my mind.
Well, maybe they're doing some extra shooting training, kind of getting quicker on the trigger. I know we do have a new shooting range in the basement of our new, soon to open, I guess, what, opening, is it the 19th?
The
Santa Cruz Police Department's office, a new office across from Loudoun Nelson Center opens, and gosh, I continue to hope that could be used as a homeless shelter, at least until February. What do you think?
Well, it certainly will be. With the number of homeless people being arrested by our officers, I'm sure they could call it a shelter.
None dare call it shelter. So you're kind of keeping an eye. You're looking over the Salinas, California. And I'd promised to read more of these issues. Maybe I should read a little bit here before we leave this. We don't have a lot of time for a lot of these issues because we have so many we want to cover, but again, we're talking about the killing of Jose Hernandez. I'm going to read again the story. Relative says, force excessive. The Salinas woman who made a call to police early Thursday morning concerning the welfare of her stepfather said she thinks officers used excessive force in the fatal standoff. 21-year-old Tanya Hernandez admits her stepfather was troubled. In fact, that's why she called the police. She wanted them to ask Joseph Joe Hernandez to go home. Sometimes he would get sick, and he was tired of being sick, Tanya said. He wanted help. What happened after the call made to the non-emergency line at the police department has left Tanya and her family asking why police use deadly force. My dad wasn't going to hurt us. He wouldn't hurt anybody, Tanya said. I asked police to come and and ask him to leave, they totally overreacted. I called them to help him, not to hurt him. And here's how Tonya describes what unfolded Thursday morning. Tonya Hernandez, I guess it's Tanya, that's what Mel says, and the paper says Tonya. I'm going to say Tanya. Her 5-year-old daughter and her mother, Elma, were at home at 624 St. Edwards Avenue with Joe Hernandez and his girlfriend, Barbara Lopez. Wednesday, Joe and Barbara had been staying at the house for a few days. Joe wanted to spend some time with his 2 stepdaughters and his 12-year-old daughter before leaving for Los Angeles. Joe and Barbara had planned to leave Thursday to visit Joe's parents. Tanya said Joe and Barbara are like one of the family. Joe had done laundry and cooked dinner for the family Wednesday night. But Joe seemed to be depressed that Star, his 20-year-old stepdaughter, was moving out of her mother's home. Little did Star know that the room she moved out of Wednesday would be the room her stepfather would die in hours later. What happened that day is that my little sister Star moved out of the house. He thought he was losing his daughter. He raised us since we were 3 or 4, but Mom and him had been separated for 10 years. Tanya said she was awakened late Wednesday night by Joe, who came into her room and asked if she had a gun. Tanya replied that she had no gun. Joe apologized for waking her and left the room. But Tanya was concerned about Joe, who had a history of mental illness, so she got up and found her mother, who was talking to Joe and Barbara. That's when she found out that Joe said he wanted to kill himself. Despite the family's concern, none thought Joe would harm himself or anyone, including Tanya's mother, Elma, who is president of Barrios Unidos, an anti-gang movement. He was really sad, Tanya said. It just all got to him, and I didn't want to deal with it. While unemployed, Joe served in the Army for 13 years. He kept office records in the military, Tanya said. He knew a lot of things that he couldn't tell others, confidential things. When he slipped into one of his disoriented states, Tanya said, he would ramble about military things. In fact, 2 months ago, while at the Hernandez's home, Joe went off again, as Tanya described it. Around that time, there was bombing in Kosovo, and I think that freaked him out, she said. Tanya wanted Joe to go home. Joe and Barbara lived in Seaside. He was begging to stay, Tanya said. He wanted to be with his girls. He feels like we are all that he has, but we have our lives to live. He doesn't understand that, Tanya said. While Joe had been treated at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Palo Alto, Tanya said he did not want to take medicine for his illness. After asking Joe to leave, Tanya called police to check around the house to make sure he was gone. Joe was carrying a gun and a dagger like a Rambo knife, Tanya said. 2 officers looked around the house. They said he was gone, Tanya said. But he left army knives here, so I asked him what I should do with them. They said throw them away or do whatever. That was the only time prior to Thursday that police were called to the Hernandez's house. So the knife and gun incident was a previous incident.
Yeah, a few months ago.
And it didn't have any, you know, apparently had no consequences, no crimes were charged, no charges were filed, no one was arrested, no one was even spoken to in terms of warned to leave or something.
And notice he didn't actually threaten anyone other than himself.
Right. Yeah. Early Thursday, Tanya, sleepy and tired of trying to rationalize with her stepfather, called police so they could ask him to leave. Because Tanya thought the situation was not an emergency, she called information to get the non-emergency number for the police. And when she called, Tanya calmly told police that she did not feel threatened by Joe's actions. She told the dispatcher that Joe had a knife, that he was not threatening anyone. She remained on the line with the dispatcher about 5 minutes until police arrived. The dispatcher then told Tanya to step outside to talk to the police. What Tanya saw when she opened the door left her speechless. I went outside and there were tons of cop cars outside, she said. I couldn't even see them at first. They were all crouched behind the bushes by my neighbor's house. I just wanted someone to come down because I was tired and wanted to get to sleep. I wasn't screaming or yelling or scared. I knew he couldn't hurt us. I just wanted him to leave the house and find someone to help him, Tanya said. According to Tanya, police got her mother, her daughter, and Barbara out of the house, but when Joe saw the officers, his demeanor changed. I think that freaked him out, Tanya said. If he'd wanted to kill himself, he would have done it. He wouldn't have waited 6 hours. Tanya said her father was armed only with a kitchen knife. It was a kitchen knife, not like a butcher knife, not sharp enough to cut meat easily. It was a dull knife with a blade about 4 or 5 inches. From about 1:30 a.m., the time Tanya placed the call to police, until about 7 a.m., when police stormed the house and shot Joe, Tanya and her family were in the back of a squad car. Pleas to police to let them, family members, inside the house to talk to Joe went unanswered, Tanya said. What Tanya remembers is hearing the blast that likely killed Joe. It wasn't until nearly 11 a.m. that Tanya and her family were told Joe was dead. Tanya said morticians found at least 38 gunshot wounds. By the time they were allowed to return to their house, Tanya said what they saw made them question what had taken place 15 hours earlier. Police said that Joe barricaded himself in the bedroom. There was no furniture there, Tanya said. It was my sister's room. She had just moved out. Police said that he used closet doors to barricade the door. According to them, they heard him barricading the door, so they kicked the door in and shot him. There are no marks on the door, and they said they kicked it in, Tanya said. I cleaned the blood off of it. They just totally turned around the situation and made it something it didn't need to be. Tanya questioned police allegations that Joe attempted to set fires. After returning home, Tanya said saw evidence of burnt items was minimal. She had seen that a blanket had been thrown on the stove. She also saw evidence of the top of a small end table being burned. Funeral services for Joe Hernandez are planned for Tuesday in Salinas. This is a story in the Californian, the weekend edition, a Saturday and Sunday edition of the Californian, by Julie Copeland. Front page story, relative says force excessive. For those who want the California, you can buy a copy of it at the D&J's Market on North Branch of 40 and Water Streets, or you can check the library. It'll probably take a couple of days for the library copy to get there, but the library does carry the California, the main branch of the Santa Cruz Library. Any thoughts?
I got some real bad thoughts about this, because why a person calling on non-emergency line, which, mind you, is all recorded, so whatever she said and did on the phone, there is a live recording of that non-emergency phone call to the police department. Okay, so you have a non-emergency phone call by a lady who is calm, cool, collected, and who just wants this person to leave because she's tired and wants to go to bed. The lady, the dispatcher, I don't know if it was a lady or a man, I apologize, told her, wait on the phone and talk to me till officers arrive. 5 minutes later, officers arrived. She said, step out the door. What the lady stepped out to was an army. Okay? Very simple. Oh, looks like we have a call. Why don't we take it?
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hi, Robert. You know what I'm going to do? I have bipolar illness, so what I'm going to do is have myself a t-shirt made. Please don't shoot me. I'm mentally ill.
Yeah, well, you know
that. You think that'll help?
You know, I don't know. Maybe you have to have it at the head of a long pole and kind of wave it as a white flag.
Exactly. Something like that.
You need, I think, some sort of... Maybe a Geneva Convention person could come with you.
That could be it. A friend of mine works for Amnesty International. Maybe, you know, that probably wouldn't help either. They only do it after the fact.
Well, you know, it's really incredible. Looks like James wants to put a word in here. Go ahead, James.
There we go. Yeah, because just what the gentleman mentioned, I have a friend who happens to be bipolar. Let's bring this a little local. And she was down at our local metro just a few days ago and was feeling bad, had not been taking her meds, and was feeling bad and knew she was feeling bad and feeling self-destructive in a way. And again, she had a little pocket knife with about a 2-inch blade. And so she spoke to the security guard there and said she would like to get transportation to Dominican Hospital. And what was our local officer's response to this? 4 cars and about 8 police officers.
Of course.
Okay, a totally innocent young lady with no intention of hurting anyone who's asking for help. What was their reaction? A military presence, because that's what this is.
Now, wait a minute. I think we've got to understand that they're showing respect for people diagnosed mentally ill. They want to provide them kind of an escort in case they get attacked, maybe by other hostile crowds.
Exactly. Would that be it?
No, I think not, actually.
It makes me wonder, and now again, remind, we are speaking of our own local police force, and this was just in the last week.
Wow. What do you think, caller? Have you seen instances of problems with police and local people designated, quote, mentally ill?
I'm a very recent Santa Cruz resident, only 2 years, so I haven't really seen that much. But I'm hearing, obviously, I've been listening, so I'm hearing that it's an ongoing, outrageous, I mean, what's the word for it? This PC word, inappropriate, is like 10 steps beyond inappropriate. It's like, were the Nazis inappropriate? This is like murder. Murder. Ongoing murder by people who are paid by us to protect us. Excuse me. That's insane.
And apparently government policy at the moment, and city council policy, at least, we don't even get an independent investigation of any of this stuff. Of course, I'm not talking about any murders, although, indeed, the killing of Happy John Dine was termed murder by at least 2 of the witnesses who saw it, Stacy Buckaloo and Mike Schultz, 2 of the people in the car who saw Connor Carey shoot the man standing on the sidewalk 2 years ago, who was designated not mentally ill, but developmentally disabled, but there are some who would have said that there was sort of a similar connection between the two. And, of course, that case has not been reopened by our new Citizens Police Review Board, though they could have done so. It has not been independently investigated, and we have the same police chief who made the same reckless cover-up kind of statements running the same department. So I don't know what to say.
I'm curious, have there been a bunch of killings of Santa Cruz police officers that they're all reacting to? Or?
No, no. The police have killed two individuals that I know of in the last decade. Oh, I'm sorry. You're saying have people killed the police?
Right.
Police. I'm not aware that any police officer, any Santa Cruz police officers, Santa Cruz SCPD officers have been killed. And I think there was one case. You know, I've heard hearsay of one case of a man killed, a police officer, maybe a deputy, maybe a highway patrol person killed in the early 80s, at which point the rumor, well, what I heard secondhand, and again, I don't vouch for this, but it was said that the police actually formed a posse, went out and killed the guy. I mean, that was the claim by some people up in the, I guess it happened up in the National Park up near, on Highway 9. It's not Harvey West, it's got another name up there as you head toward Felton. And I don't know if that's true, and I repeat it only because maybe people can call and give more information or contradict me or whatever. And by the way, this line is open to police officers as well. If you want to call in and give your perspective on this, your official, your personal perspective, or your experience based on your training and the kind of work you've been doing for the last couple decades, if you've been around that long, hey, you know, this lines are open to everyone, so please call in.
I wonder if it's like the New York Police Department was at the time of Serpico, where, like, there were some guys who were, like, trying to be good cops and were just boggled by the fact that there was this, inherent, intrinsic, I don't know why, corruption.
Well, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely, yeah. Is Lord Acton's, dictum, and I think it's not far from the truth.
Exactly.
Looks like James got a word here.
Absolute power is, like, the worst possible thing. We need some kind of a, what the heck's that guy's name, you know, O.J. Simpson's lawyer. We need a couple of lawyers like that in Santa Cruz to, like,
what we need is police officers to see the fact that mental illness is not something to be killed for. Okay, how many of these mentally ill people, how many people, let's just pick this county, how many mentally ill people have killed people in this county? How many mentally ill people have actually majorly injured? Okay, are we looking at a county where this is going on, you know, mentally ill people are out killing people or beating people or, you know, whatever, raping people, because that's another mental illness, you know? Is this going on in our county? No. Do we have any evidence of violence by these type of people other than minorly to themselves? Is this the way we solve the man wanting to kill himself? We're going to save him by shooting him to death. Well, they really saved his life, didn't they?
I think what we have is a very cost-effective solution to a difficult-to-solve problem.
Listen, caller, let me pull you off unless there's more you want to say, because open the lines.
Exactly.
But is there anything else you want to add?
No, thank you very much. I'm just glad you're there.
Hey, thank you.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Bye.
I like her to come with a passion or a vision, like a child with a gift, like a friend with a question. William Morris was one, in a story, in a song, in the patterns that he wove, in the colors that he loved, in the hope that he gave, he brought the news from nowhere. Mind's eye, I can see him still standing with his grey beard waving like the foam of the sea, with his shaggy hair shaking and his clear eyes shining as he tells all who listen how different life would be. And he rages at the wealthy with their mutilated vision, making money the measure for everything they do, and the ugliness of kill, and the lies that are broken on the wheel that turn for the profit of the few. And some bring the news in the Sermon on the Mountain, and some bring the news in the blueprint or a bulletin, but I like those who come with a passion or a vision, like a child with a gift, like a friend with a question. William Morris was one. In a story, in a song, in the patterns that he wove, in the colors that he loved, in the hope that he gave, he brought the news from nowhere. He turned from his class and he made the lonely journey through the river of fire. And when he reached the other side, he joined the ones who had nothing, the poor and the hungry, and their cause was his till the day that he died. For he saw that in them a spark lay hidden, and he saw that in them a hope still burned for the great change coming, when the shoddy rule of mammon would be shattered like a hulk that the storm has overturned. And some bring the news in the sermon on the mountain, and some bring the news in a blueprint or a bulletin, but I like those who come with the passion of a vision, like a child with a gift, like a friend with a question. William Morris was one. In a story, in a song, in the patterns that he wove, in the colors that he loved, in the hope that he gave, he brought the news from nowhere.
And that's Leon Russellson, News from Nowhere. Lines are open here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can give us some news from somewhere. 427-3772. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides for the next hour and a half. We're hoping to get some reports on other subjects, as well as the need to contain untoward police violence, the need to establish, to reestablish civilian control over militarily inclined police. We're also concerned about homeless matters here in Santa Cruz, rights of people who are out of doors. I want to make a few quick corrections. My producer has advised me the officer who was shot dead was a sheriff's deputy officer. I don't know if he was shot dead or knifed. He was killed, and his name was Michael Gray, according to my producer. And this was 1982 in Felton. A transient was blamed and found dead 2 days later in Harvey, in Henry Cowell, there we go, Henry Cowell Park, supposedly had shot himself, but the word from locals was the police had tracked him down and done the deed. Since this is around the same time, the police were regularly beating up, sometimes lethally, homeless people, and the police department underwent a major shakeup as a consequence down here in Santa Cruz. I don't find the story that incredible, although I've never gotten clear substantiation of it. I don't know the name of the transient who died. Perhaps if anyone knows, and if anyone has any more details on the events following the death of Santa Cruz County Sheriff Michael Gray, we can get some updates on that. What have we got? We talked to Mel Mason earlier. You've heard about, we've been discussing concerns around the Jose Hernandez killing just a few days ago. A quick announcement from David Silva, who frequently is in church in the morning, so he can't be on the show. He is the man in circulating the Hate-Free Zone Initiative. He wants us to know that you got to get your petitions in. This is the last day. If you want to do any petitioning today, you can get petitions from his porch, which is 144 Belmont Street, and take one from his porch and photocopy it, and bring them back, I guess, or turn them in yourself. I'm not sure quite what the story is on that. They need like 3,800 valid signatures from city voters to get this initiative on the ballot. I have given my position on it. I think it's a good issue to organize if you talk about the homeless, the hate crimes against the homeless that are happening even by people in positions of authority, like the police department, the sheriff's, district attorney's office, the mayor, but just posting hate-free zone signs around Santa Cruz seems to me like a feel-good exercise I've never been particularly up for. But I like the idea of talking about the specific hate crimes that have happened, institutional structures of hate crime in Santa Cruz, like the sleeping ban, like the downtown ordinances that make it illegal to sit down. And I think that educating citizenry around that is a very good idea. So that's my kind of mixed view on that story. There is a city council meeting coming up next Tuesday. You should know that it's not the city council meeting that the Sentinel says is happening at 3:30 and 7. City council meetings never happen at 3:30 anymore. They happen at 3 generally on every second and fourth Tuesday and at 7. But tomorrow, actually day after tomorrow, Tuesday the 16th, is a special city council meeting. It's happening at 1 o'clock. Thank you, Santa Cruz County Sentinel. And that meeting is going to be concerned with La Bahia, which is, again, part of the old, we thought it was dead, but it walks, it lives, the beach area redevelopment boondoggle, the thing we thought we'd slain, the dragon we thought we'd put underground after the last election. It's back, it's bad, its name is Byers, and it's flaming at us. And apparently the mayor is now leading the charge on a lot of these things that we thought that she was opposing. Well, she was opposing a year ago, and Celia Scott and she were the minority on the city council. We've asked a couple of knowledgeable locals to listen into the show and call in. You've heard their voices before. Scott Graham, Fred Geiger, Phil Baer. And maybe my producer will get on the horn and try to get them to get in touch with us, because I think they have a lot of the specifics that I don't have, particularly about the Dolphin Lee project, which I've talked about in the past. I tried to kind of query Christopher Crone, council member at the last council, at the last Free Radio Santa Cruz Bathrobe Spears Broadsides program. That was last Thursday. Couldn't get much out of him, but he did do us the dignity of being on the air with us, and I suppose we should be grateful for that. Things are happening in the courts too, and we've got an interesting interview or two on that subject. Let's get canned for a minute here and see how that plays out. 427-3772 is the phone number to call in if you've got anything you want to say about any of the subjects you've heard.
36.010A, which prohibits sleeping in a vehicle or outside or in any building except the house or hotel. But this is 10.16.040. That's the county camping code in a prohibited area. And you got this ticket, it looks like, on 12-14-99. That can't 10-14-99. Thank you. And so that'd be October 14th. And what happened, Chris? What was the circumstance of the ticket?
Oh, I went up by Moe's Alley up there, and I parked alongside of Toys R Us there. And was kicking back, listening to the radio, deciding whether to go to Moe's and listen to the music or 7-Eleven and get some coffee or what. And I got a bang on my door, and it was about 1:30 in the morning. And so I stepped out, and the officer, of course, took my information and general ID, license.
It was a sheriff's deputy?
Yeah, I believe so, sheriff's deputy.
What did he say to you?
He said that he was writing me a ticket for camping, and that he was just basically doing a general sweep of the area because someone had made a complaint previously. And he said it wasn't personal, but he was just ticketing everybody.
Had he ticketed other people that you noticed before, or was he about, did he go up to somebody else after?
Well, I was under the impression that several people were ticketed in the same location the previous day.
And the location again was?
Right next to Toys R Us, off of SoCal, up by Dominican.
And this is a place where folks, during the day or early morning, wait for jobs, right? They hang out
no,
on the corner?
No,
it's not. I'm sorry.
This is an industrial area. There's some shops there, you know, car repair, there's a Circuit City, you know, down the street. There's a bar down the street, you know.
But this had been a place where numerous vehicles had sort of slept overnight. Kind of, in a way, is it a safety measure that where vehicles sleep together at all?
Well, you know what happened was, I could tell you what the motivation behind the whole thing was, is that I've been around this area for a couple of years, and I've seen what's been going on. There was a lady that parked there with her three kids and their RV that she had just inherited from one of her relatives, and she was letting their garbage pile up outside of her vehicle. You know, toy wrappers and just miscellaneous refuse and debris, and it was starting to pile up, and nobody policed her and she didn't police herself. So what happened was that it got so unsightly that somebody filed a complaint because they were tired of looking at the trash on the side of the road. And unfortunately, that's that age-old case of, you know, one irresponsible person ruining, you know, a basically mild situation for anybody.
How long have you been parked here before?
Not at liberty to say, but like I said, over the last 2 years, I've seen, you know...
You've been pretty much in your vehicle and pretty much in the county?
Yeah, I'm very self-contained. I don't have...
So in other words, you've been a regular criminal, and you should, by right, have 365 tickets for every night you slept, correct?
I guess so. If I were to cop something like that, yeah.
Actually, they'd have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt and have specifics. So even if you say, I slept every night, and I slept every night at such and such a location, that would not be a confession of guilt, because...
Well, I think...
You could deny it in court.
I think that they would be a lot less worried about it if people were a little more congenial about their appearance and their behavior.
Well, you know, my thought... Sure.
You know, it's just people leaving their garbage around, and it's an eyesore, and it's...
Well, my thought is that garbage is a separate problem. I don't see why the police didn't go up to the van, say, this is littering, madam. You know, we're giving you a ticket for littering. Clean it up, but we're not going to arrest you for sleeping, because sleeping is a human need, and there's clearly, you know, no legal places for people to sleep, at least most people,
who are
homeless or who are in their vehicles.
I agree. They're doing, what it amounts to is they're doing a blanket...
A
blanket sweep on anybody that could possibly be the culprit, rather than on whose specifics, you know, who specifically is the culprit, or who's specifically causing the problem. They're just blanketing everybody that's in a...
And the problem isn't sleeping. The problem seems to be littering. When that happens, it's something else. Now, people may tell you, well, we can't be sure it's the litter. You know, who did what.
Right.
But I think that there is a way for the police officer at least to investigate by knocking on the vehicle, saying, is this your litter, giving a person a warning, clean it up. And I think that would probably have an effect of doing so. Or alternately, of course, other people in other vehicles could step forward and offer to help. But I still think there's a solution to the problem that has nothing to do with the camping ticket. And this camping ticket you received, which you're here in court for today?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I actually clean up around my motorhome, even other people's garbage, just to keep myself from being implicated. So I'm actually I'm leaving a clean spot where I park, even if somebody else throws their garbage. Like the other day, somebody threw their milk carton on a sidewalk in front of my motorhome. I picked it up, took it, and threw it in the garbage so that it doesn't look trashy around my rig.
You're a professional musician. I've seen you playing on the Mall. And how does that go? Is it getting tougher to play down there? Are you getting a fair reception and proper protection rather than harassment from the police and hosts? How's that going?
Gosh, as much as I hate to say it, lately the hosts have been kind of benign, I think is the word. And
I hate to say it, sounds good.
The police have been kind of benign too, really. They haven't really done anything for me other than whatever it is that they're supposed to be doing. I haven't seen them really.
Kept the area safe of hobos and tramps.
Yeah, you know, anybody that's easy enough to attack, I guess.
Actually, let me say that I saw an officer last night around 9 o'clock. No, it was actually in the afternoon. He was walking up and down, up Pacific toward Laurel or Broadway, that street, and there was a whole bunch of people sitting under an awning next to an open shop, less than 10 feet from the store window, under an awning, to get out of the damp and the rain. And by right, in terms of the city law, let's say by a wrong city law, but legally, he could have told them, move. You can't be here. Instead, he walked by. And I want to give a hats off to that particular officer. Unfortunately, he's a new officer. His name starts with A. Don't know who he is, but I would commend him for that. And indeed, this issue has come up at the Homeless Issues Task Force. That every year around Christmas, Thanksgiving time, at least one of the members of the Homeless Issues Task Force has observed police sweeping under the awnings, getting people out into the rain or into the damp or into the weather, whatever it is. Even if the awnings are places that are closed or even vacant. You know?
That happened to me last year.
Really?
The cops came through, and it was pouring kind of a medium rain, and I was playing my guitar out. You know, and I was in a little used awning area. I mean, there wasn't any real traffic coming in and out through the doorway. I think it led up to whatever, but I wasn't blocking anybody, but... And the cops came in and said, you know, you can't stand right next to the building. You're going to have to move out of there. But as I've gotten to know them, at this point, they're pretty much they don't bother me about standing under the awning. I think if you're new in town, they'll give you more, you know, gap about blocking window dressings or whatever. I think people are more concerned about you covering up their display, because merchandising is the major force down there. Those people are making money off of their window dressings because people come in to buy their crockery. And
right,
if you're blocking it with your need for staying dry,
right, well, I mean,
it's costing them
clearly
money.
Clearly, the merchants own the sidewalk. The rest of us should move aside, right?
Surely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I want to also point out that I heard from you this morning that not only are you defending yourself, in a sense, by trying to find a legal place to sleep in the county often and getting ticketed for it on occasion, but you are providing sanctuary to another man who was beaten 4 or 5 days ago up in... Was it Felton or Scotts Valley?
Felton, in Felton there, right at the intersection by 9 and Graham Hill Road, I believe.
Now, was this a man trying to sleep under a bridge, or what happened?
Yeah, he was apparently sleeping under a bridge, and 5 kids jumped him in the middle of the night and beat him up with a stick and before he could get out of his sleeping bag and put him in the hospital for a couple of days. So, and it was raining, and I felt like, well, you know, I kind of put him up for a couple of days. If I was him, I wouldn't want to sleep outdoors for a while.
Now, today is...
I don't want to implicate anybody, but everybody keeps telling me that they think that it's... that the kids are somehow children of some local officers or sheriffs or something. I keep hearing that, and I'm not saying that...
You weren't a witness to the beatings.
No.
Did John... And John had no description. He's the man who was beaten,
right,
because it was too dark. Did you say about what time this happened?
No, I don't think he gave an exact time. I think it was about 1:32 in the morning.
Now, today is Monday, so this would have been Thursday or Wednesday or Friday. Something.
Yeah, I think it was, I believe it was Wednesday, Tuesday or Wednesday night.
And like, we're talking about early in the morning on Wednesday, maybe, or early in the morning on Thursday?
Yeah, early, yeah.
And what you say, he fears he suffered a broken rib, even though he was told that, you know, he didn't have any actual breaks when he was released from the hospital?
Yeah, that's what he was saying the other day, or, you know, and he thought he might have a concussion, too. But I'm not a doctor, so I don't know, you know, for sure. But I know that he was in the hospital for a couple of days, and they put him on some, they had pretty prescription painkillers, and he was pretty good, man. I mean, you know, he's tough. He's a tough old guy. He's 40-something. He's a clean person. He doesn't walk around in, you know, filthy clothes looking like a bum or anything. I mean,
someone you've known from before? Or?
I would have never suspected he was sleeping outdoors anywhere. He looks like he's a man of means by all appearances, so. But,
You might tell him to get in touch with 423-HUFF, which is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, just to talk, even off the record, about his assault, because we're trying to compile a list of assaults for the entire year to give the city and the community an understanding of just how often this happens and how much people need safe places to sleep and park. Let me ask you this. If there were a parking structure open at night, which where they said you can come here and you can sleep, you can use the bathroom, if you're gone by dawn, would you use it?
Probably from time to time, sure. If it was, you know, if it was well organized, sure, you know, and it was well placed. You know, and you know, if it's set up right, I could see a real benefit to having a facility like that. You know, as long as it were well maintained. But you know, the sad thing is this: the fellow that's staying with me right now today is pretty much going to have to find another resource because I'm kind of limited as to my ability to extend myself.
Take him to the Homeless Resources Center, which won't have any resources for him probably, but when informed of his situation, he may be able to get some help through the Shelter Project, which if you're coming directly out of a hospital on occasion, you can get like a motel voucher, although this isn't by any means guaranteed. And also, it's important because there is a, tomorrow night at City Council, there's a meeting of the City Council where for the first time the Homeless Issues Task Force will be on the agenda to make a report, and its first resolution was to abolish the camping ban. Not just the sleeping ban, but the whole camping ban. Now, Mayor Byers has kept this one under wraps for months, refused to put it on the agenda, pushed it around, pushed it back to January, but now it's on the agenda, not really to be discussed as an action item, but at least to be revealed that a city body says this law is unworkable given the fact that there's a shelter emergency and gangs of thugs running around beating people up.
You know, it's, we just, sometimes I'm overcome with this feeling of sheer disgust when I think about how selfish people are that they even have such a big problem with somebody sleeping out in their neighborhood. I mean, you know what? I think that it's so selfish that you even give a shit. I'm sorry, but I really do. To me, if I had the choice to make, I would say let anybody and everybody from this point to the opposite end of the globe come here and lay down and go to sleep till you can't even see the ground, and then deal with it from there. I think it's so selfish that people are so screwy that they can't let people take a damn nap. It sometimes just pisses me off to no end. It's just the epitome of self.
Now, we have an objective individual with us here who's been observing the whole process. Your name, madam?
Beth.
And Beth, how long have you been around the Santa Cruz area?
About a year and 9 months.
And are you yourself without lodging?
No, I have a place up in the forest in Boulder Creek.
Uh-huh. And have you essentially been, have you ever been, as they say, houseless or homeless?
No, I haven't.
Any friends other than this scurrilous looking individual who've been homeless?
Yes, I know another scurrilous individual or two who are also homeless.
What do you make of these beatings? What do you make of this crazy law? What's your, I should say laws, since it's a county statute and a city statute. Any reaction? You've heard Chris's account here. You, of course, know better than I because you came to court with him this morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, I have a definite opinion, and I have had a definite opinion on the homeless issue ever since I first became aware of it. And, you know, I feel that there shouldn't be a homeless problem because I feel that in every city, the authorities are responsible for the overall well-being of the people. And if there are people who have needs, instead of being just turned out on the street, they should be taken care of instead of just abandoned, so to speak. Abandoned a certain segment of society. I feel it's very wrong.
Leading heart liberal, eh?
Pray so.
Yeah. Well, they're just, as Mayor Byers put it in February, no place for them. Sorry. Next item on the agenda?
I don't think there is a more important item on the agenda. The people, your people are your resources of any country.
I'm sorry, your time is up.
Okay.
I'm just emulating Mayor Byers and her approach.
You haven't met before.
No. You get your wrap down. Chris, anything you want to add before we wrap this up?
I still think that, you know, like, I think we need to just like lighten up for quit kicking around people that are trying to get their programs together and maybe try to help them get it together instead of squashing them underfoot.
Anything you want to say?
I agree with that 100%. I think every person has a lot to offer, and you know, to treat people like they don't count is just completely wrong.
Thank you both.
And that was a conversation with Chris and Beth in the courthouse. I guess it was last Tuesday or Monday, and they talked about the beating of a man named John up in Felton. With me in the studio is James Nay, still hanging in there. So, James, you say that... Actually, I got a call while we were on the listening to that tape asking if we knew anything about the identity of the man who had been found dead, I guess, what, in the river or something?
Yeah, right down by Laurel Street there.
We were assured by Sergeant Clark that he looked too well dressed to be a transient. That was what was in the paper. But you apparently witnessed this man's body being found?
Yes, I actually saw it. I don't remember what type of pants the gentleman was wearing. I do remember he had, I will admit, they were nice looking white tennis shoes, but he had on a black leather jacket, fairly bloated. He'd probably been in the river a while, you know, a few days. So it would be hard to state age. His age pretty much could have been anything from 20s to 50s, but he appeared to be clutching a bottle at the time they drug him out of the water.
Hmm. Well, maybe he was, getting his just desserts for violating the open container law. Well, maybe some civic person suddenly thought, well, got to deal with this alcoholic problem, and did in a direct fashion.
Well, I think it would behoove our local police department and other officials to come up with some kind of identification or at least a description of the gentleman. I do know it has got the homeless community pretty much in an uproar. They're pretty upset. They're looking to see who's missing, but of course people go leave town, people come back very often when they're homeless, you know. So for someone leaving is not necessarily, so now they're worrying about all their friends that have left.
You know, who is this person in the water? Okay, it strikes me that I don't believe he was a well-dressed person. We're talking about someone in tennis shoes and a leather jacket. Descriptive of, if not homeless, our local poverty community. It behooves us to try to let people know who this person is, try to soften the blow a little bit, and maybe appease other people's minds by realizing it's not their friend that's out there. But to me, it strikes me that they're really withholding all information on this person. Why hasn't it been announced what he looks like? You know, height, weight, hair color. You know, if they can't get an identification on this guy, shouldn't they provide media, media attention so that we can find out if this person is a local missing person or a member of the homeless community who's missing, you know, and get some degree of satisfaction.
Sounds reasonable to me, James. I know we have a meeting of the Homeless Issues Task Force coming up, Monday, tomorrow at 5:30 at the ABC room of the Municipal Auditorium for those who like meetings.
Be there or be square.
Be there. I guess you'll have to be square because the meeting is chaired by numerous... it's got a lot of good people in it. The processes often tend to slow down the meeting, but there is a period of time from 5:30 to 5:45 or thereabouts when you can speak during oral communications. May actually be a shorter period of time. I think they're working on their midterm report, and what I'd like to see them doing is find ways to get around Mayor Byers' barricading of any